school board. I'll appoint James.
Ah, wonderful. Well, I've met your wife quite a few times. Oh, yeah, we've had some good conversations. So yeah. I've heard her mention your name, and I feel like we might have talked once or twice. I used to run Court Square Theater for a while. Oh, yeah. I know when we had the moved everything over. I know you all were handling the Calhoun's group thing. So I think we might have talked a couple times about that.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
And this is scheduled to open back up soon, or maybe have?
Yeah, that's the plan from what I'm no longer working with the Arts Council anymore, but from what I hear, the plan is right now they're going to kind of open it. They're planning to be open by the end of this month for the Hispanic Film Festival, so hopefully they'll be able to stay on track with that.
Good.
I'm Richard Lowell. I've been in the area 35 years or so, and just live in the county, actually, at this point.
Well, welcome.
And Ned Adamson, and we've lived here since 98, and I'm retired now, but I used to be in the radiology group at the hospital here.
Oh, wonderful.
So, and my wife runs the new free clinic in town here, so she was
whenever on
the street for a long time. The new one over,
the new one
in the Zapanta office building off of Reservoir.
Oh, okay, yeah, right across from like the Arby's and...
Arby's,
that's it, yeah.
There we go.
The bigger clinic closed, but there was still some need, and now it's all a volunteer thing, but they're started back up there, so...
Which is the way it started 38 years ago.
Which is the way it started a long time ago.
Yeah, my friend Kathy Witten had worked with her here, so
if you know
Kathy,
So
I served on planning commission with Kathy for about a full term, and I've just known her for years.
Yeah,
so
she's a sweetie.
Oh, she's wonderful. She's the best.
She is.
Well, what I think I'll do so that the recording has some continuity if anyone listens to it, despite the fact that we've all got a printed copy, I'll just read the question
so
that it'll make sense to someone just listening. But thanks for meeting with us. I think I can speak for the group that our main interest is in just trying to make certain things recently have been so evenly divided that I think we all feel that it's critical that no matter what the outcome, for things to work for us, everybody needs to go home the next day feeling comfortable that they won or lost. And that's, I think, the motivation for the group. And just to better understand, part of that is for us all to better understand the process.
Of course, and that's what we're here for, is to educate the public and make sure, what the process that we're going through is better understood by everyone.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, because we would, I think maybe, hopefully people will look at this process that we're going through to feel good that everybody's being above board and everything's being done properly, and that gives people comfort, and that encourages people to go out and vote. Because I think we've all heard people say, "Well, we don't know about the system, and we're not going to vote." But we want to try to reassure people that, the system, it does work, and particularly in Virginia or here in Harrisonburg, that there aren't anything going on that you should feel comfortable with the process.
Of course.
So the first question they have was, what is your biggest concern about the upcoming election?
There's nothing about this specific election that I have concerns other than just the concerns we've had for the last few elections with, COVID being something we have to factor in to an election, which is, of course, new for the world of elections, having to deal with the pandemic and all that comes along with that. For me, individually, for an election, I'm a new registrar, so this is going to be my third election. So some of the stuff I don't have a long history to base off of. My concern is just specifically just being able to communicate adequately with the public. We do have a lot of help from city departments to be able to get the word out. But there's always going to be in government limited budget how much you can spend on advertising and how much news and how many times you get in front of the newspaper or someone from the TV station. So I just worry that the important information that voters need to know about how we conduct elections, as far as what they can do with voting with all the new changes that have in the last few years, I worry sometimes that information doesn't get out there as much as I would like it to. But with in tandem with the city, other registrars around the state and the Department of Elections, there's a fair amount of work put into educating the public, but if we had the ability, I would love to be able to do more, and that's something I'm definitely looking forward to long term. Other than that, As far as concerns with election, like I said, is just trying to navigate COVID-19 and you know, the city's new policies as far as how to handle that with early voting and election day. So, but beyond that, I feel pretty comfortable that given the last two elections, that we've got the resources that we're going to need to be able to handle this fall.
Do you have a sufficient number of election officials willing to work?
Those are two separate questions. We definitely have a sufficient number of election officials. We've got probably more than we need that have signed up, a fair amount of Republicans and Democrats. Now, as far as the being willing to work, that's always the tough part, because we'll get people that'll sign up, that's willing to do it, and then we find out later, you know, I can't do this date, I can't do that date, or I'm not available to work on election day. So it's difficult to determine that sometimes, because we'll see, hey, well, look, we've got, you know, 140-some officers approved. When we start polling and we find out only 50% of them are really available to do what we need them to do at this point. I'd say right now, we're in a better place for this election than we were last year. We didn't have a lot of Republicans for the last election. We had a tough time getting people to come in and go through the process. We've gotten a lot more people to sign up to represent the Republican Party, and we've got a lot of independents this time around. So I feel good about it right now. The initial kind of scheduling we've done for the early voting, we've got everyone we need as far as party representation for early voting. Election day, we're still trying to get into doing that. So far, it seems like we should have enough, but since we haven't made the official schedule, you know, I can't say for sure that yes, we have enough. But you know, we'll probably have a better idea that if there's any representation area, if we're going to need more. If I had to guess, we'd probably need more Democrats, because we've gotten a lot of paperwork from people that want to represent the Republican Party, a lot of interest in that recently, so a lot more than we've had recently. So I think we should be pretty good on Republican independent representatives. It's just seeing how many people that, you know, were Democrats that supported them or represented them in the last election, whether they're going to be available for this one or not.
Just maybe a quick question, because I'm just not totally clear on what the rules are.
Sure.
So is it that you have to have an equal number of Republicans and Democrats, and only if you don't have enough Democrats and Republicans for parity that you would use an independent?
So we don't have to have equal. We have to have representation. We strive to have equal representation.
Okay.
But there's certain elections we don't have to, like, you know, in like a single party primary. So say the Republican Party has a primary that the city holds. We're actually under code not required to have any Democratic election officers there. But even in this past Democratic primary we had, we made it up, even though the code doesn't say we had to, we made the goal to make sure we had a Republican representative, even if it wasn't, you know, half or equal. We tried to have at least have some. So, I mean, the goal is to have equal. I'd say probably most of our precincts we will. It just might not be equal at every single one. There might be one that has one more Republican and one more Democrat, or another one that has one or the other. So we'll strive to, you know, based on what people's schedule is, to have equal, but there might be places that, you know, we might have a few more independents in certain places.
And that would be the same for the CAP precinct for early voting.
Well, the CAP's a little bit, well, I always talk about, so when we talk about CAP, there's two different scenarios with CAP. It all falls under the central absentee precinct. So any sort of voting that happens in City Hall is called CAP, Central Absentee Voting. There's two components to that. There's early voting, which is the in-person absentee voting, as we call it. And then there's CAP, which is the pre-processing of the mailed ballots. So there's two different teams that meet for that. For in-person voting, then yes, we won't necessarily have even, because we typically don't even have like an even number of officers. A lot of days we might only have three officers out there. So we need to at least have one representative from each party. So there might be one day where we have one Democrat and two Republicans, another day we have two Democrats, one Republican, but we do have to have representative from each party. And if we have, you know, four spots that we need to fill that day, our goal will be to try to have, you know, equal representation, but there probably will be more independents in that case. CAP basically mirrors your electoral board. So electoral boards are, I'm not sure how familiar you are with electoral board. I'm sure you would be familiar with it. So, you know, it's going to be represented, it's going to be weighted towards the party that's in the governor's seat. So right now, because there's a Democratic governor, there's two Democrats and one Republican, the CAP team would mirror that. So on the CAP team that processes the absentee ballots, each team will mirror the governor's party. So it'll be two Democrats, one Republican. Now you can have more than that. That's just the starting one that you would have. Okay. That you would have. And then we'll typically we try to have four on a team. We still are still trying to determine how many bail ballots we're going to have, because that's actually starting to pick up now. We hadn't gotten many requests until now, but with the students back, we're starting to get a lot more requests coming in for absentee ballots. So we're still trying to determine how many people we're actually going to need for that pre-processing. But we'll at least have to have three. We'll likely have four. We might have two teams.
Does that take place on just one day, or does it take place multiple days throughout the early voting period?
So we have the option of doing it as many days as we determine that we need to do it. Now, there's a new law that says we have to start doing it within 7 days of the election, where if we haven't done it up until then, we have to do it each day before the election when that 7-day period starts. It's really up to the individual registrar. We're tasked with determining how many times we need to do that based on how many ballots we've mailed out and how many we've gotten back. Last year, because it was a single party primary and low turnout, we only did it one time on election day because we had very few ballots out. Last year, during the presidential election, I think we did four. We had to meet four times, so two times before the election, one on election day, and then of course we always had to have a meet one time after the election because there's that 12 p.m. deadline on the Friday after an election that we can receive ballots up until then. So if we have ballots that come, we have to have a CAP team come in that day to process them as well. So I'd say at the least, well, they'll be meeting two times this year, definitely on election day and definitely the Friday after the election. As you know, if they're going to be before election day, I just don't know yet. We have less than 200 ballots that have been requested right now. Right. So 200 we can probably process on election day. If we start getting up in the more 100, 500, 600, then we'll probably look at having another day for them to come in and actually do that. We'll just have to see how many more requests we get right now. Okay. So we'll probably, by the time we actually mail them out, which we have to do by the 16th, and that's probably what we're shooting for right now, September 16th, we'll probably have a pretty good idea of how many times we need to meet other than election day, if any.
Okay.
And as it stands now, it's by request only for mail-out ballots for absentee.
Oh, as far as the voters?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. They have to fill out the 701 form or the 703 form. No, that's the only way for them to vote by mail. They have to fill out the form, and they have to sign it and date it and put their name, last four of their social, and the address that they want the ballot. So they have to send that in. We approve it, and they don't necessarily all get approved. Sometimes they don't. And it wouldn't be approved because there's a key piece of information that's missing in there. Or they're not a registered voter, or they're not a registered voter in Harrisonburg or something like that. There might be a reason to deny it.
And do you do signature comparison at that time when you do an absentee ballot?
So in Virginia, we do not do signature comparison. We don't. That's not required in the code for registrars to do that. Now, we'll typically still look at the signature that we have on file just to make sure. Typically, what we're doing in the curing process is we're looking at the signature to make sure it looks similar enough and that all the information is there. We use it as kind of a component where, okay, they're missing this information, this is missing, and the signature doesn't look anything like it. So we can't base anything on the signature, but we can use it in tandem with other information being wrong or missing, but we couldn't base it just on that signature. So it would be a component of multiple reasons that we might make a determination.
To number three, do you feel you have the resources, equipment, personnel, and training needed to run an effective election in November?
Yes.
Okay. So that makes question four moot.
We could always use more. Yeah. We could always use more elections. But we have an adequate amount. But, we will always be making requests for more to expand things where we can or make things easier. But what we have now is definitely, I'd say, adequate to conduct
a question as we were talking, and we talked about a primary, if it was a Democratic primary, are you still required to have Democrats and Republicans at that primary, or is it just Democrats? Or vice versa, if it's Republican, do you have to have both?
So I was talking about that before. So the code says if it's a single party primary, you only have to have officers of election.
I thought that represents
that party, okay, or independents. But like I said before, our electoral board and my office staff, we make a point to try, we strive to have representation of all those, as long as we can. Now, I'd say that during the last primary, we definitely had Republicans in each precinct. We might not have had a Republican a junior chief at each one. I think we had an independent at one because we just weren't able to find one. But our goal is always to try and, you know, even in those situations, have representative from all parties there, as long as it's you know, as long as we have the possibility and the staff power to do that.
Question number five says the county election board is supposed to consist of two Democrats and a Republican under a Democratic governor. But in some areas, boards have had trouble finding willing Republicans and have appointed an independent instead or another Democrat. What is the situation in this county?
I would think if anybody tried to claim that Jane Berner was an independent, they would have a very serious problem on their hands. So, yes. I would say we are meeting that and then some.
Question number six, what about precinct staff? Are you able to have equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans? Yes, no, don't know.
Like I said, I don't know. I don't want to say that, yes, I will have equal representation at this point. We'll absolutely have Democrat and Republicans at all precincts. Whether it will be equal at each precinct, I don't know I can say yes or no. I'll have to wait to see once we've gotten our final schedule whether we'll have equal. But we will absolutely have representation at each office and strive to have equal at each precinct.
I had
one follow-up on that.
Yeah, sure.
So you've had people that have submitted their whatever application or whatever to be an election official. Where are you in the process of approving those people?
So majority of the applications that we've received before August 25th have been either approved or not approved at this point. So as far as approved by the electoral board, so the first process step is they fill out their interest form. We put them before the electoral board to be approved. Once the electoral board approves them, we send them a letter to fill out their state form. It says they aren't, you know, that they meet all the qualifications other than what's set forward in the request form. Then they send that back to us, and we send them an email or contact them to find out what availability they have. Typically, in the entrance form, we put on there, you know, we'll say, can you work early voting? Can you work election day? Not everyone fills that out, or, you know, and of course things change too. Sometimes we get those things early enough. But at this point, everyone that's applied, you know, has been before the electoral board at this point. They might not have all received letters yet. Now, I know the previous registrar had sent appointment letters. We don't, or at least for appointments as far as you're going to be here at this precinct, we typically will try to do it by email or phone call just because sometimes we have to be so fluid where if we find, we have more Republicans than we need at spots, we need to move one over here, we'd rather be able to contact them by phone or email in case they have to be moved. We don't want that letter to be the thing that sets in stone with them. But as far as the approval process, everyone that's applied before August 25th has been before the electoral board. Now, I think we've gotten some applications since then, so they'll go before the next electoral board meeting, which will be September 13th, I think it is. Yeah, I think that's the 13th, Monday. It'll be the next time that we consider them.
And I have a follow-up on that one, too. Anecdotally, we've heard stories about and nothing attributed to this location, but stories about the lists of independents efforts being made to look into what primaries people have voted in to try to tease out whether there's a predominant feeling among those independents one way or the other. Is that anything that has happened here or to your knowledge to under any predecessor here?
I can't speak to what any predecessor might have done, but I mean in the state code that's not something that's laid out as far as, you know, it's up to the individual officer to make the determination of what, you know, whether they're going to be independent or represent a party, and then the electoral board members send those lists to the local party to look at those and make any determinations that they want from that point. But you know, there's nothing in the code for as far as us, you know, in regards to looking at independents' voting records or anything like that.
Next question, number seven, was, is the County Board of Elections engaged in your work year-round, or is it mostly near election cycles?
Well, I would just make one correction. It'd be City Board of Elections.
City, yes.
For this one.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, they are a very active board. They meet, you know.
So year-round.
Year-round. They meet at least once a month, if not twice.
Okay. Some questions now on the voter rolls.
Sure.
Number eight was, when was the last time the voter file in your city was scrubbed or cleaned? If you know that date and the number of days since the last audit, but something we can get a follow-up from you if you
I don't know the exact date, but the last NCOA audit, which would have been, I want to say, the last week of June, was when that was sent from the Department of Elections.
Okay.
But I can look and figure out the exact date that was run.
Of June. Okay. Does number nine was, does the health department, coroner, or Bureau of Vital Statistics send a list of deceased people to your office every month so that they can be removed from the voter rolls?
No. So the Department of Health does not directly send those to individual registrar's office.
Okay.
So they're not required to do that.
I couldn't speak to whether they're required or not. I wouldn't want to say they are or not. I know that they are required to send that to Department of Elections, who then determine from there to send it to localities. But as far as if they're required to send it to each individual locality, I couldn't speak to that.
But they are required to send it to the State Board of Elections.
I'm new, so I don't want to say how exactly the process is done. I know that they are required to send it to the Department of Elections. And then we get that information from the Department of Elections periodically throughout the year.
How often do you get that?
It can be once a month. The thing we'll run into is once you get close to deadlines, we don't get them as many times. But it's usually about once a month, I think. But maybe like election month, we might not get it that month because the books have been closed and we can't edit anything at that point anyway. So we usually might get, like, say, November. We probably won't get one in November, but we'll get a bigger one in December.
And then are you able to pretty much, you know, within a week or two, go in and have somebody check or...
Oh, we do it that day. We do it that day. No, it doesn't take a week. It's when we get the list, it's processed that day. Usually it's typically not... It's not a large enough list usually that takes more than one day to process.
Okay.
Number 10 was, when was the last time the clerk of the court submitted a list of individuals who declined to serve on jury duty on the basis of being a non-citizen?
So I'm not sure that they are required to send that to us. Okay. I have never received one, and I can't speak to, I don't believe they are required to send that to us. Now, we receive non-citizen notifications from the Department of Elections, from a variety of departments. The local clerk of court might be involved in that. I couldn't tell you exactly which departments send that information to the Department of Elections for us to populate our list.
So you get a report of some sort, but you're not certain what the origin of
that is. Yeah, I definitely know that we are not getting that list directly. Now, we get other lists from the clerk of the court, but specifically to that, no. But I don't know that they wouldn't submit that to the Department of Elections to populate the general list that we receive from the Department of Elections.
Number 11 was, when was the last time you had access to the National Change of Address List or any other change of address list? And again, we can get a follow-up for dates.
So, this is kind of falling into the same area. We don't get direct access to the National Change, as individual registrars. We don't get direct access to the National Change of Address List. The list is only accessed by the Department of Elections, and they then take the addresses which localities they need to go to, and they disseminate it to us. But we don't get direct access to the National Change of Address List. We just get the information from the Department of Elections that would pertain to our locality.
Okay.
And so how often do you get things from the Department of Elections?
Specifically for National Change of Address?
Or anything. Or does that just come monthly and it includes all of these things we've been talking about?
So, yeah, we get a, I mean, obviously we get stuff daily from them. So we have a system called VAERS that we use. That's the system we use from the state. Fortunately, I can't really talk about, you know, the specifics of that system as that's a specific system to the state. But as far as information we get from them, we get information daily on, you know, online voter registration, absentee applications. So we get a variety of lists that would include things like people that are deceased, non-citizens. What are some other things? The only thing that we would not get, so the only thing that directly comes from a list that doesn't come from VAERS would be the clerk of the court when he will send me letters directly saying that someone has been determined mentally incapacitated to be able to vote. So that's okay. The only thing that will directly come to me from the clerk of the court. Okay. Everything else will, as far as those lists are concerned, will filter through the Department of Elections that we will then receive from them.
Okay. Question, that Department of Elections, how is the leadership of that department determined? Is that, are those elected positions, appointed positions? Are they long, long appointments that span various administrations? What I'm getting at is, what's the potential for a department to be packed by a new governor's office? Or I know nothing of how that department is put together.
I really haven't been in this position long enough to really speak to that, you know, to be able to tell you exactly. But I know that the head of the Department of Elections is usually appointed by the governor. As governor positions, but beyond that position, I really don't know enough to speak to that.
I mean, it just seems, I'm hearing, it seems like everything is filtered through there. So that just that question just came to mind.
Well, I don't want to.
Not filtered. Maybe not the
everything.
Right word,
is, not everything. You know, we still, of course, we're getting, you know, any paper applications coming to this office.
Yeah.
So you know, we're still dealing with all the things as far as any sort of handling of ballots. Department of Election isn't allowed to be involved in that. And as far as the Department of Elections filtering information, the thing to keep in mind is that they are not allowed to. They are providing a conduit for us to receive this information. They are not allowed to process anything. So as you know, as far as any of the records we get, they are facilitating conveying them to us. But they are not allowed to be involved in any sort of process.
So they're just passing the information as it comes to them.
Correct.
Directly to you with no.
Correct.
Changes.
No, they don't have the access to change.
Okay.
Any of the files. They're just a conduit. We receive this information,
right.
But
right.
They cannot access the records. They cannot change them. This is something that I ran into last year is when I first started in the position, and we had a lot to do right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I had asked, is there any help that the Department of Elections can provide? And they said, actually, no, you'd have to hire us in the city of Harrisonburg and come work for you for us to be able to access anything. So we, as the Department of Elections, cannot help you in that avenue. So I learned that very early on.
Next was 11A, which is how confident are you that the voter file is accurate and up to date? Are you confident, that the voter file is accurate and up to date?
Well, I will say it's as accurate as we can get it, being that we are a college town. Just the fact that we have so many transient voters, people that are here for maybe one election 1 year and then they're gone the next year. Which can become difficult as not everyone's aware that they would either need to update their registration or cancel it. But I would feel pretty confident that we are between the National Change of Address list that we work on each year, and then there's a variety of other processes that me and my staff will go through to try and look through our registration list to make sure we're getting it as accurate as we possibly can, but I'd say we're doing a pretty good job, given the fact that we just have such a transient population in the city of Harrisonburg.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there can always be room for improvement. And if I had 10,000 more employees, it'd be beyond 100% perfect.
I think for that 12B, the concerns, I'm just going to scratch in my own notes here, that the transience of the student population is the biggest day-to-day concern.
Yes.
Number 13, how many households in your locality have more than 7 individuals registered at the same address? And again, we can get if it's not a number that you know, or we can get a follow-up on that.
That would be a tough one. Again, with it being a college town and the transient of college students, we have a lot of addresses that would probably have more than 7 because there's so many apartment buildings that might not have apartments individually listed. Technically, JMU, every student that lives on JMU campus is at the same address. They're just at different box numbers. So it's a hard question to answer, honestly. I could give it a shot. I don't know that there's a list that I can pull up that'll give me the exact answer you're looking for. So I'd say at this point, I don't know.
Okay.
But it's something I can see if I can look into and have a general idea.
I just wonder if that's something that your software, you could do a sorting. I'm not very computer literate, but this that I know programs have different sorting mechanisms that that you can put parameters in.
There are some things we can do. I mean, remember all this information stored in Veris as far as access in. There are reports we can run that'll give us some of these answers. I just don't know if I can run parameters that'll say specifically seven individuals.
Yeah,
I could look at all the lists and we could count, which, you know, I can't say we have the time with an election coming to do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know that there's a way for me to run a list that would say, give me all the ones that are seven or over. I'll look into that and see if that's something we can find. But I would say there's quite a few.
Yeah,
just because we have students that are moving in and out of town that might not have been caught up in the National Change of Address system yet. And so, yeah, there'd be a few, but as an exact number, I don't have that this time.
Makes sense.
Okay. Number 14 was during voter registration, I presume. How do you verify that voters are citizens?
That, so from Virginia State Code, it's from the box that they check on the voter registration form.
Registration form.
So at no time when you come to the register, you're required to bring an ID of any sort anymore.
So, yes, they can bring IDs, and people are required to bring a form of ID, but the forms that the state allows at this point aren't necessarily, you know, I wouldn't say that they're
official.
Some of those things, they are official, but they wouldn't necessarily determine someone's
citizenship
or not, because someone is allowed to bring in something like a utility bill and use that as an identification. Utilities wouldn't necessarily verify that as well. So, but the under state code, it's the box that they check that they are a U.S. citizen that verifies.
So, in effect, it's an honor system. In effect.
Well, you know, there is a system in Veris where they have information that's being double checked as far as if someone is using a social security number that's already on file. So. You'd have to have a valid social security number
part of the application process.
Well, we don't check the social security number, but the system is keeping social security number. So if it's one that's already on file, the system would let us know that is already an existing social security number, or that it's a existing social security number that someone else is using. But we don't specifically check social security numbers unless they are in the system.
Okay. Next couple of questions had to do with voting machines, which I guess all of the precincts in the city here use the scanning voting machines. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So there are three types of voting machines used in Virginia. This is question 15.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me which machines that we use here in the city?
It is the ES&S DS200.
ES&S,
I can't remember what their moniker stands for, election security and something. I'd have to look that up exactly, but shorthand, it's ES&S, DS200. And I think ours is the, I'll have to get back to exactly which model of the DS200. I think we have the 440, but I'd have to look that out again to confirm that. That's what we use for a scanner. For the Americans with Disabilities Act machine, we have a new machine also from ES&S that we're using this year called the Express Vote. Before we've been using the AutoMark machine, which has been phased out from new regulations from the state.
And that Express Vote's made by the same manufacturer?
It's made by ES&S
yes,
as well.
ES&S.
Is it hot in here?
Mm-hmm.
Hot?
Yeah.
I think we don't have AC.
Oh, my
goodness. It says 76.
I've
been eyeing it.
I was like, I'm starting to feel a little hot. Oh, yeah, it said the 79. That's not going to really help, is it?
Maybe the electric bill.
And the next question, number 16, was who calibrates the voting machines, and can you briefly explain the process?
Sure. So the machines are calibrated by our officers of election. They're called custodians. City of Harrisonburg has four custodians. We have one chief and then three associate custodians. They are appointed by the electoral board, and they get training through the our vendor who makes the machines, which is Printelect, as well as the overseen by the Electoral Board and the standards set up by the Department of Elections. They would also work in tandem with Printelect to receive any new calibrations that we receive from them through USBs.
One follow-up I have, just again from talking to people, I've never worked at polls before, but I've heard more than a couple people talk about, I guess if you leave the felt pen on the machines, that the bleeding through to the back of the paper, and does that affect the scanning of the machine? And if is the person at the machine supposed to look to see if it's bled through the backside? Or?
So in Harrisonburg, we give people pens. I checked all of our felt pens. There shouldn't be any more, so it shouldn't be a problem. But if someone were to use a felt pen, typically the ballot stock that we get is thick enough that it shouldn't be a problem. If someone brought in, did bring in their own magic marker and marked it, if the ballot bled through to the other side in a location that the Scantron or the scanner had not set as an appropriate place, the machine would usually
spit it out
as either an overvote or some sort of error with the ballot, and then that would give the option of the voter to be able to
spoil the
ballot and then get a new ballot at that point. But typically, if there's a mark anywhere outside of the spots where you can mark in the ballot, the machine should spit the ballot back out.
Do you invite party representatives to witness the calibration?
Yes. So we actually just sent out the notice to the chair of the Harrisonburg Republican Party and the chair of the Democratic Party. We're also required to send out the notice for the calibration to any independent candidates that are on the ballot. So we sent out the notice to the chairs of both the parties and the two independent candidates that we have on the ballot for this election.
Number 18 was, are the voting machines ever connected to the Internet?
No.
What about if you get firmware updates or software updates for the machine? How is that done?
That is done by USB. All the firmware and updates come on a USB that we receive from Printelect that are then installed in that manner. But no, the DS200s and the Express Votes are never connected to the Internet. Neither are the poll books. Now, as far as poll books are concerned, there are poll books that the state has allowed to hook up to the Internet for situations of satellite locations. So there are localities that have satellite locations, they have multiple locations where you have early voting, so you would require the poll books to connect to the Internet. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to know when someone's been checked in at one of the satellite locations. At this time, the city is not moving forward with a satellite location, so we do not plan to purchase any poll books that would allow for Internet connectivity. But if that were to change, if the city did decide that they wanted to have a satellite location, we would have to look into that system and figure out the safest way to do that.
Okay. Next few questions had to do with changes that were introduced due to the COVID problems. Question 19 says, as an election professional, do you think that the changes made in the election process in Virginia in response to COVID have weakened the election integrity, strengthened the election integrity, or made no change?
It's a difficult one for me to answer because I have never worked in an election in my capacity that COVID wasn't a thing. So I couldn't tell you what it was like before COVID. So I'd say I don't know at this time.
Has your office received any funding or in-kind contributions for training, staff, voter education, or equipment, or any other purpose from outside of the state of Virginia?
No.
Just to follow there. But, I guess you heard about Mark Zuckerberg organization sending money around. I thought Virginia got some of that. So, for instance, none of that money would have come into Harrisonburg?
I mean, I didn't, as far as if they gave it to the Department of Elections?
No, I guess I thought it was going to different localities.
The only organization that I had that reached out to me in last year's election, there was an organization that Arnold Schwarzenegger had put together for election integrity. I cannot remember the name of the organization. They had approached us about applying for a grant for machines. We did not apply for that grant. But that was the only sort of situation in which you're regarding that I was approached by. I don't recall getting any messages from them
from anybody from Facebook in regards to that, but we definitely didn't receive any money from anyone from outside of the state last year or this year.
Do you communicate with other registrars on a somewhat regular basis?
We have a we have a listserv that we communicate on.
You didn't hear anything about other places getting funds from that?
Well, to be honest, I mean, last year there was so much going on that I couldn't keep up with that list. So there might have been emails out about that. I don't recall one, but that doesn't mean that a locality might have received it. But I'm not aware of any locality getting anything like that. Now I know some other localities might have looked at this Arnold Schwarzenegger organization, but I couldn't speak to if anybody actually applied for it or received any money from that or not. But I can say 100% certain that no, the Harrisonburg office did not receive any funds beyond the CARES Act that we'd received from the Department of Elections, which came from the federal government. That was the only money outside of the Harrisonburg budget that we received from last year.
Okay. Question 21 was effective 1 July 2021. Senate Bill 1097 eliminated requirements for voters to have a witness signature on absentee ballots for any election during the declared state of emergency. The governor has now rescinded the state of emergency. Are you training your staff to ensure that there is a signature match for the upcoming elections?
So again, like we talked about before, in the state of Virginia, we don't do signature match verification, but we are looking for witness signatures, of course. So, you know, staff will be making sure that all the ballots that come in by mail do have a witness signature in place. Signature match beyond, you know, what we look at in the state is difficult in some ways because the witness what qualifies as a witness doesn't necessarily have to be someone that might be someone we'd have a signature to compare it against. But what we're looking for is to make sure that we have a signature there and that the signature for the voter and that the information for the voter is correct. But we will be looking for for this election that to make sure that there is witness signatures on the B envelope.
Question 22, there's concern in Virginia and across the country about the security integrity of the ballot drop boxes. What are the chain of custody procedures of ballot drop boxes?
So in Harrisonburg, we don't do drop boxes. We do drop-off locations. So the office is a drop-off location. Does that mean anyone that wants to drop off a ballot here at City Hall has to come into City Hall, come to my office, and drop it off with one of my staff? We're required by code to have a drop box at each precinct. It's confusing because there's the ballot drop boxes. When the code talks about that, they're specifically talking about a mailbox style box that's on the exterior of a building that doesn't have, it's not staffed. There's drop off locations which are required to have an officer of election or office staff there, and so ours would be here in City Hall and at all the precincts on election day. And as with the most previous city council meeting, we are going to be instituting drop-off locations at locations around the city yet to be announced. But of course, again, that'll be staffed by two officers of election. They'll only be there for a day at a time at different locations, and they will have to follow the chain of custody code that the state sets out. There's documentation where they fill out how many ballots they received, and we have to sign off on that when they bring the ballots in, and we have to certify that what they put on the document was correct. And of course, there will also be all the other chain of custody, like the seals that we'll have to put on boxes when they're open and closed.
23, I guess, refers to the last election cycles, which I don't know whether drop boxes at that time. It asks about the monitoring of so when we were under the state of emergency, where there were no unmonitored drop boxes.
Yeah, we didn't have any exterior drop boxes in the city. So the code doesn't require us to have a camera on the inside the office. So
yeah,
that would only be for anyone that are in the exterior, but we do not have one at this time and did not have one for last year either.
So back to your, that you're going to have some drop-off locations, I think it's periodic places here and there. You said there'd be two people there. Would that be a Republican and a Democrat?
Yes, it has to have equal representation. So it has to be a Republican and a Democrat for that, each one of those locations. So we're hoping to announce that next week, the locations and the dates for that.
Okay.
We're looking at probably the last week of early voting before Election Day, between the hours that our office is open at 4 or 5 different locations around the city, specifically looking at areas that where we can service the population that may not have vehicles or easy access to public transportation, and just to help with concerns that some voters have
have said that they are concerned about returning ballots by mail. This will give them an opportunity to drop off a ballot with two officers of election rather than mailing if they prefer that.
Like nursing homes, possibly?
The locations we're looking at right now, we are hoping to have, I haven't confirmed these yet, is one for VMRC, one for Lucy Sims, one for JMU, and then the fourth one is still to be determined, somewhere on the south end of town. But hopefully we'll be able to find that location soon. Where we're specifically looking for locations of areas where we have voters that do not have vehicles or transportation.
Right.
I think since question 24 becomes moot because we don't have video, we don't
right.
have any unmanned drop boxes. Next few questions involve expanding observation efforts to ensure integrity of elections. Now, question 25 says, would you provide training and support or designate us to provide training and support for an election day page program as described in Virginia Code 24.2-604.3?
Oh, I know that code very well. Yes. I've had to learn a lot about this because I'm actually in the process of working with Harrisonburg High School about instituting a page program for the city of Harrisonburg. So that is something I've been in communication with them. It's going to kind of be the pilot program for this year, so I don't know that we'll have a page at each locality. We're going to start small and trying to get a handful of students that are interested. I hope to also potentially work with Eastern Mennonite University as well, or this high school or school mm-hmm. rather, as well to see if they're interested in taking part in that. But it is something we're hoping to expand to allow students, local students, to take part in the PAGE program.
Question 26, would you authorize nonpartisan election observers with the same rights as party representatives as described in Virginia Code 24.2-604.5A?
So I would not authorize that independently. That is something that would have to be made in tandem with the Electoral Board. Now, the Electoral Board is empowered to authorize election observers if they see fit beyond the partisan observers, but that is something that I would not make that decision on my own, no.
Okay. Question 27, would you authorize international nonpartisan observers from recognized election monitoring organizations?
Again, that would not be a decision that I would make on my own. That would be a determination that would be made in tandem with the Electoral Board to determine whether that was appropriate.
Number 28 is, have your local party chairs been notified that they're entitled to send observers to your office each day as it is open, each day it is open, and receiving in-person absentee ballots?
So that is something I'll have to get back with you on. I know that's a question I've had recently, and I've asked the Department of Elections about it, and they're going to give better guidance on that. We run into some issues with this as the state code describes pre-processing as something that should probably be two-part rather than one-part, because it includes the part where you cure a ballot, which is the process of us opening the exterior envelope to make sure it's been signed, that the appropriate address is on there, and then the process where we have officers of election that actually check them off the poll book to make sure that they were someone that requested an absentee ballot, that they are a registered voter in the city of Harrisonburg. Then they take the ballot and they ran it through the scanner at that point. Now, as of last year, in this previous election, we had observers for that part of the process where the ballots were opened, that they were checked off the list and put into the scanner. The process of curing becomes difficult because it does require us to look at someone's personal identification information, which we're charged with not sharing with the public. So working with ELECT to determine exactly what they're looking at as far as the code is concerned on having observers for the curing process, as that's something we do day in and day out in the office. It's not something we do. We only do it this day. We get them as the ballots come in because we're required by code to let them know within 3 days of receiving the ballot that there was a problem with their envelope. So we have to do them as they come in. We can't wait to do it another time. We have to do it right then. And because we deal with so much PII in the office and we're having social security numbers, addresses, it would be really difficult to have observers in there each time we're carrying a ballot and keep that PII, out of view. But I know that the Department of Elections is working on some sort of guidance that once I get that, I can send that to your organization and the party chair locally as far as how ELECT is going to put that out.
after they're cured, presumably then they're batched and then scanned in as a batch when there's enough to do, and that,
yeah, so
that process is observed.
So the process, well, as far as scanning into the scanner, yes, is observed. So our process is we receive the ballot, we open the exterior envelope, we will take the interior envelope, our staff will make sure that it's signed, that this time around that it has a witness signature, the address matches what we have on file, and that their name is correct. As long as that is all correct, there's a bark on the outside that we will scan into Verisk to say that the ballot has been received by our office. We will then put it in a secure location to save until we set a date for CAP to come in to observe, to actually process them and scan them into the scanner so that they can be tabulated. If we find that there is some problem with the B envelope, then of course then we start the cure process. We have to contact the voter, hopefully by mail or phone, or by mail or email, or by mail if we have no other options, to have them come in and cure the ballot. Now we have to do that within 3 days of receiving the ballot, but they have until the noon at Friday, the Friday after the election, actually come in and cure the ballot. So that's their deadline, although we encourage them to come in as soon as possible to cure the ballot.
And the electoral board does that? Is that what you said?
No, the electoral...
Comes in to secure... I'm sorry, I'm trying to write it and I missed it.
Sorry, you have to repeat what part
of
the question?
So who secures the envelope after and then scans it in? I mean, I know you're scanning the code to say that it's the register and that you've done the address.
Right.
And then you open the inner envelope and all of that, and then it goes to...
So it's put in a secure location where secure... That's part of our security policy, so we don't release to the public where ballots are secured at that point until they're scanned. So they're secure, put in a secure location, and then once we have our CAP team come in to actually do the job of scanning the ballots into the tabulator, that's when we send out notice to the parties what days we're going to be doing that. We have a chain of custody form that I then sign with the chair, or sorry, not chair, but the captain or chief of our CAP team, who will then sign a chain of custody form saying how many I've released to them that day.
Gotcha.
Then they'll go through the process. We usually give them a poll book. They'll go into the poll book and make sure that the ballot they're looking at, that this person actually requested an absentee ballot, and that they're still a registered voter in the city of Harrisonburg. As long as that they three of them all agree that that is true, they will remove the ballot from the machine and separate the ballot and the envelope at that point to make sure that the vote is secret. So you want to make sure that as soon as they have confirmed that the B envelope and the ballot get as far apart as possible, so that you don't know what envelope that ballot came from at that point. And then once they've gone through all that, they'll take the stack of ballots that they have that have been separated from the B envelopes, and they will scan them into the scanner at that point.
28A was, do you have a publication that you provide to your election officials regarding rights and responsibilities of observers?
Yes, so there is a publication that the state provides that we do send out to, that we get to the observers and we get to the party chairs as well.
Okay.
Does that have a name?
I want to say it's called like the Do's and Don'ts of Observers. I can send you a link to it if you all would like later. It's a public document on the Department of Elections website. But I believe it's called the Do's and Don'ts of Observers, I think is the name of it. But don't quote me on that. It might have a more technical term than that.
And B becomes moot because the answer was yes. And I think that's what we've got for our list of questions, unless folks have other things.
One other question.
Sure.
So during the early voting, at the end of the day, do you all make a record of the number of votes processed during that day?
Yeah, so we have a log that we create that we check the number. First, we have a number that we check off at the beginning of the day, well, how many votes are on the machine, so we write that number down. The poll book, since we start a new poll book each day, will say zero because it's a brand new poll book, so we don't check that number first in the morning. And then throughout the day, if there are issues with a spoiled ballot or a voided ballot, the officers of election will log that. Then at the end of the day, we will log the number that's on the machine as well as what's on the poll book. So the first thing we make sure of is that the poll book number of people that have been checked in, and the number of votes that went to the machine are the same. And if there's not, what is the reason? Typically, it's because there was a voided ballot situation where someone had been checked in and they did not vote the ballot. And so we'll check against that. And so then we have a log that we keep track of that each day. And we subtract the numbers against it to make sure that the numbers match up.
Is that pretty much the procedure with all registrars?
We're all required, we don't have the same log that we have to keep. And we are required to keep a log of it. Now what exactly, I do something similar to my log that I use, I got from the registrar in James City County. And so the log that she created for her location, that I just basically use the same log that she uses. But I can't speak for other registrars, but typically that's what all registrars do. They keep track of the daily numbers in some sort of log. Now some might have I know some fill out an individual form each day. We keep a running tally that we can keep track of, and we'll make copies of that as we go along.
And so, for instance, an observer, are they able to look at that log?
That's a good question. They can definitely see the public count on the voting machine and the number on the poll book, absolutely. So they can write those numbers down.
Okay.
As far as the log, possibly, I'd have to look at what we're tracking on the log again to make sure. But they can absolutely look at the number of, at the end of the day, how many voted ballots are on the machine, and then they can look and see how many people were checked in on the poll book. So that information's public and out there for observers to see.
Well, thank you. I may email you. I'll have to go over my own notes, but I think there were a couple of places where it asked for more specific information, and I'll email you that so you know what those are, and then you can get back to me.
Over number 7 of people in the address. Like I said, I'll have to look and see if that's something I'm capable of even getting in a digestible form that wouldn't. It might be something that we have to do after the election to take a look at to get a round number. On that. Other than that, I can send you the observers list as well that we get from the state. And if there's anything else like that.
Yeah, if you'll send me that link to the little booklet, I'll be glad to send it out to the group as a whole. I'll send you a little follow up email so you'll have my email address again. And thanks for getting back so quickly. I emailed at like 10 in the morning, and by 1 o'clock in the afternoon we had an appointment date.
Amazing.
And time. So thank you for being so receptive to us.
Of course. I mean, like I said, that's what we're here for. A component of the General Registrar's job is to educate the public on the process and make sure that, we're being transparent and offering as much information as we can to make sure people understand what we're doing here and how the process actually operates.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Glad to do it. Thank you all so much.